From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Joe Shaneman. It's State of Nevada. In the United States, some call it alternative medicine or Eastern medicine, but for many Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, it's their primary source or only source of health care. In this episode of our award-winning podcast, Exit Spring Mountain, we're looking at the history and modern interpretation of this 3,000-year-old practice. We're also taking a look at a brand new medical center in Nevada that's offering both Eastern and Western medicine.
Enter T&T Ginseng, a Chinatown Las Vegas one-stop shop for herbs and all things traditional Chinese medicine. Dried sea cucumber, tiger balms, unique teas fill the aisles. An elderly woman in the back packs each prescription carefully. The contents specialize to treat anything that ails you. You're in and out. No mystical incense fog, no exotic elixirs, no gongs. 20 years serving the community with medicines that go back thousands of years. In fact, we're talking about the oldest codified system of medicine in the world. I have to be transparent here. I hate needles. I was very intimidated by acupuncture and didn't try it until I turned 40. I suffered from incessant migraines. No ibuprofen, hydration, or headache-specific pill could mitigate it. But the first time I rested on that acupuncture table, feeling those thin needles stick out all over my body, I felt at peace. I actually experienced the deepest sleep I could remember, absent of pain, fully relaxed, and I was hooked. You're listening to Exit Spring Mountain, a podcast celebrating Asian American and Pacific Islander history and examining AAPI issues. I'm your host, Lorraine Blanco Moss. And in this episode, we're looking at traditional Chinese medicine, sometimes called Oriental medicine, also known as Eastern medicine or alternative medicine. But what does it really mean? How did these terms come about? And what's the background and current controversy surrounding the name of the practice? Long considered in the United States as an exotic curiosity, the ancient medicine dating back 3,000 years has become more mainstream. How did we get here? Who are the people who practice and promote it? Does it work? And where does Nevada fit into this story?
There's so many acupressure points on your ear that's good for your overall wellness.
Traditional Chinese cupping therapy. Welcome to a traditional Chinese medicine herbal pharmacy.
Hi, do you want to lose weight?
Okay, when you're scrolling through TikTok, it's easy to find influencers extolling the virtues of TCM. But what you might not know, Nevada was the first state to fully legalize acupuncture here in the U.S. Tamara Vennett Shelton, a social historian and professor of history at Claremont McKenna College, shares the recent history.
When we think as Americans, when we think about Chinese medicine, we tend to think about acupuncture. We tend to think about this sort of craze for acupuncture that developed in the 1970s, that sort of swept a kind of affluent patient consumer. But the history of traditional Chinese medicine in the United States goes back much farther in time. It is, you know, several hundred years of history, really, if we're going to talk about the colonial period, what became the United States, and then the history of the United States. Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, has always been a part of the American medical marketplace. And this is really what my book, Herbs and Roots, is about, is uncovering this very long relationship that has existed between therapies that we would consider to be part of a Chinese tradition and American medicine as it was, and it still is, a kind of buffet of offerings from a lot of different medical traditions, from a lot of different what we might call medical epistemology, sort of ways of thinking about health and healing and the human body.
But why are Western populations turning to Eastern medicine more frequently these days?
Whenever there's dissatisfaction with whatever is dominant, there's an impulse to go look elsewhere. And I think with the history of Chinese medicine in the United States, you see that. You see these moments or these populations who are being unserved or underserved by Western-style medical science, and they go look for an alternative. And Chinese medicine is there. Chinese medicine, you know, it has always been part of the AAPI community. It's also just always been part of the non-AAPI community. I mean, sort of non-Asian Americans. Anyone who, from about 1850 on, anyone who lived in an area where there were Chinese people had access to Chinese medicine. Chinese herbalists advertised to English and Spanish speakers in this country.
In the professor's book, Herbs and Roots, she dedicates an entire chapter to how Nevada became the first state to legalize acupuncture in 1973.
Just a kind of culture of Nevada being sort of more daring, more like avant-garde, you know, the entertainment industry, right? There was a certain sort of spectacle and exoticism about acupuncture and certain charismatic individuals who brought acupuncturists from China.
Tamara says TCM is an umbrella term to encompass many different therapies. We've talked a lot about acupuncture so far, but practices such as reflexology and herbalism are grouped together under TCM. Tamara dives deeper.
TCM, traditional Chinese medicine with capital letters, is a medical system that develops in Maoist China. So it develops after the Communist Revolution, after 1949, when Mao Zedong had to rebuild not only the infrastructure of China, which had been really decimated by first the war with Japan and then its own civil war. But he also had a sort of political rebuilding project to do. And he found that reinventing, reimagining these traditional Chinese therapies was a way to do both. So he took traditional Chinese therapies like acupuncture, like herbalism, brought them into the laboratory, brought them into the hospital, and simplified them, scientificized them, and then redeployed them in places that were lacking hospitals, that were lacking really robust medical services. And so that TCM with the capital letters is actually what Americans first encountered when Nixon normalized relations with China, when he sent doctors over to Maoist China to observe acupuncture in practice in big public hospitals there.
Many people in the field still use the word Oriental to describe these types of medicines and therapies. So what kind of power is at play?
You know, and it gets worse, right? So American Orientalism also would cast Asian people as being deviant, as being licentious and prone to vice. Certainly not scientific, not modern, not all of the things that Western-style medical science, as it evolved over the course of the 19th century, wanted itself to be. So my book really looks at the way that Chinese medicine becomes a kind of useful rhetorical device for Western-style medical scientists who are very much, in the late 19th century, still struggling to assert their control over the American medical marketplace, still very much struggling to consolidate what it means for them to do the science they do. Because we have to put ourselves in a historical mindset here and understand that at the end of the 19th century, there's no foregone conclusion that Western-style medical science will in fact be superior to traditional Chinese medicine, to homeopathy, to naturopathy, to osteopathy, right? There's no foregone conclusion that the American Medical Association is going to become, as it did become this sort of ascendant monopoly on the bureaucracies that license and control and regulate the American medical marketplace.
The term Oriental can be cringeworthy to many of us, but it's still used predominantly in the TCM field. In 2016, President Obama signed a bill into law that removed the term Oriental from all federal use. That bill sparked further national debate in professional organizations and colleges. There's also an online petition by the diversity, equity, inclusion-focused organization, Influential Point Group. It's demanding removal of the term from the profession, stating that the term is rooted in xenophobia and white supremacy. Several accredited schools have since made changes to their names, but there's still no consensus on how or what to rename the profession and practice.
There's another treatment group here. And of course, we have rooms. We do acupressure treatment. Yeah, so acupressure.
We sat down with Dr. Link, a licensed OMD, or Oriental Medical Doctor, as it's still called, who's practiced in Nevada for more than a decade. He owns a Las Vegas practice, Link Oriental Medicine, where they also offer Tai Chi classes. He says taking into account the whole body is the quintessential theme in TCM.
They have a strong influence from the Taoist philosophy. Just like the regular Western medicine, they have strong influence on the European philosophy. Taoist philosophy, they want to do something natural and to make sure that we'll be able in harmony with the nature. Coming from Asia, so Oriental medicine has been part of the culture over there. Born and raised in Vietnam, came here. And I also have an uncle who did both Western medicine and Eastern medicine as well, which is Oriental medicine. Oriental medicine is supported by almost, like, just talk about China, 1.3 billion people.
Dr. Link took us on a detailed tour of his practice. He showed us the cupping machines, tools, and his pharmacy cabinet, brimming with more than 100 different types of herbs.
I have over 300 different types of herbs here. Mm-hmm. And among them, you can treat so many different conditions. You know? And all these herbs are high quality. They are granule herbs, which is powder form 5-to-1 concentration. But this is what you see in TNT, a lot of those are regular herbs like this. Those, we don't use them that much anymore because of for compliance. Because the deal is, those you have to cook them. Mm-hmm. If you don't cook them well enough, you don't know how to do them, it doesn't come out right. And people, it tastes nasty, I hate to say that, but people don't comply.
That's true.
Them.
I haven't done
that
all my life.
So that's me. But this one, you love it. So a lot of people come to me, they say, well, you know, my doctor think I have an autoimmune condition, therefore I just have to take steroids for the rest of my life, you know? And that is quite encouraging when you hear that, because it seems like there's a dead end. You have no other way to get around. Now, steroids basically just try to suppress the condition so you can go on with your daily life. So, but you never reach the bottom. But that's one thing about the strength of the traditional Chinese medicine is to be able to work with an autoimmune condition. And I see a lot of good results from that.
Dr. Link also described the various treatments at his practice. He says acupuncture involves inserting needles into specific nerve points to promote physical and emotional well-being. Herbalism uses specific plants as teas, tinctures, and powdered supplements for healing. Reflexology involves applying pressure to areas of the feet and hands believed to correspond to different organs in the body.
Basically, the whole body system, we have 14 meridians that run through them, and you got over power close to 400 points that they can use, pick and choose to treat all kinds of ailments.
Okay. You're listening to Exit Spring Mountain, an AAPI podcast from Nevada Public Radio. Coming up, Dr. Michelle Lin gives us the 411 on the brand new Healthy Asians and Pacific Islanders Medical Center. Learn about the Hopi Center, Nevada's first healthcare facility catering specifically to AAPI communities.
When it comes to supporting the Asian and Pacific Islander community in Nevada, the Asian Community Development Council steps in.
Because we know how important it is to meet people where they are and to provide free services for those in need.
ACDC has multilingual staff and volunteers because language should never be a barrier.
For years, we have been serving our community in the heart of the Spring Mountain Corridor.
The Asian Community Development Council invited our team to the grand opening of the Hopi Center. It's a new API Medical Center in Spring Valley, west of Chinatown.
Basically, the Hopi Center is trying to be all to be your one-stop shop. So we're not only trying to get Chinese medicine in there and other Asian medicine modalities in there, but we want to make sure that we have all the specialists there too. And then the specialists themselves will also be of Asian, well, they don't have to be of Asian descent. They just have to be able to speak a secondary Asian dialect. But usually what comes with that is that mindfulness of Asian culture, of Asian medicine, of dietary usages for medicine and their philosophies.
I can see it in your face. I can hear it. You're excited about this, aren't you? Like, as somebody who's studied kind of both sides of medicine.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited. This is actually a better outlet for me than my own clinic for Asian medicine, just because I don't know enough. And to have the ability to work besides a Chinese medicine doctor, Wang Yu University, and anybody else that approaches, it's very exciting to me because I can't stop learning. If I stop learning, I might as well just keel over.
Dr. Lin emphasizes that this center will not just be for the AAPI community. They're also open to providing care for anyone who walks in, whatever language they speak, regardless of their insurance or their citizenship status.
Healthcare is so important, and I think there is a huge fear in the Asian community regarding doctors. There are horror stories, whether they're true or not, about what happens in a hospital, what happens with certain medicines. So it's just, for them, it's nice to have that outlet to be able to come and see someone that looks like them. And also there's a fear with not being documented. They are still people. They're here. Let's take care of them. You know, they shouldn't be excluded just because of unfortunate circumstances. We want people that are not documented to be able to feel comfortable with their healthcare. And for them, you know, we provide scholarships for them too. They don't have to have certain paperwork. We just need to know that they're in need.
And so those in need will be offered the benefits of both philosophies of medicine. While it may have gotten its start in Nevada as an exotic and exciting treatment in the 1970s, AAPI families have found healing with Eastern medicine for multiple generations, even for families with doctors whose primary focus is Western medicine, like Dr. Lin.
So we did cupping, we did gao shua, which is where they take a coin or a comb, the back of a comb. Usually it's made out of ox horn bone, and they scrape the back to help you get better from colds. So being exposed to that, I was like, you know, being an MD is so boring. Just the thought of just being prescribing medications or just doing surgery, just didn't seem like fun for me and didn't seem that it was like it would be very effective. And partially because I grew up exposed to Chinese medicine. Like, my mom was an amateur acupuncturist. So we did it for our family. I pretty much grew up in Las Vegas. I was here since the age of 4. And I've always found the human body fascinating. And I just knew from an early age I wanted to pursue medicine.
It's now our job to make sure we're providing space to share these stories so anyone can benefit.
I think it's so important to tell these histories of AAPI people and tell them as part of the history of America, the history of the United States. So often AAPI histories are marginalized or not told at all. And I think it's really time that we insist that AAPI history is American history.
You You've been listening to Exit Spring Mountain, a podcast from Nevada Public Radio. We record this show on the lands of the Southern Paiute people. Thanks to our guests this episode, Dr. Tamara Vennett Shelton, Dr. Vince Link, and Dr. Michelle Lin. Special shout out to ACDC Nevada and the Hopi Center. This podcast was made possible with a grant from the Panda Community Fund. Music in this episode is courtesy of Epidemic Sound. Our team includes senior producer Nessa Concepcion, academic research consultant Mark Padungpat, and assistant producer and researcher Isabel Chen Rice. Joe Shaneman oversees podcasts as news director of Nevada Public Radio, and our sound editing, mixing, and mastering is by Christopher Alvarez. I'm your host, Lorraine Blanco Moss. Like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave us a review. Also, follow us on our new Instagram at Exit Spring Mountain. Thanks for listening. As always, we appreciate you.